Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
It certainly is. And this morning we've got Dr. Brian Ruddy in the studio. Morena, how are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm very well this morning.
That's good. That's very good to hear. Hey, we're talking to you about some really fascinating sounding research, how the biological muscle system is being used as an inspiration for the design of a motor that could enable robots to move more like us. That sounds very like something plot from a movie kind of a thing, but I'm sure it's much more rooted in real world science than that. Can you give us a little brief overview of what this project is?
Sure. So, you know, we think about in the movies, we're always worried about these killer robots are going to take over the world. But if
I feel like that is exactly what the listeners will be thinking.
But if you actually go into a factory or a research lab and you look at what these robots can do, you or I can take them in a fight.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
They're slow, they're awkward, they're heavy. You know, the only robot you'd worry about is one that's just very large.
Right. Yeah.
So we want to have robots that can actually work with us.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, they have to be more like us. They have to be able to move the way we do. And especially one kind of robot we think a lot about is an exoskeleton, where you put the person in the robot.
Ah.
And, you know, that can help out. It can help people lift heavy objects in a factory or a warehouse, or it can help out someone who's suffered a stroke or has some other disability,
mm-hmm.
and help them get better and also help them carry out their tasks during the day. And so we have to come up with a way that we can make these robots move more like a person.
So how do you do that? Because that sounds like quite a tricky task, because obviously fine motor human action is really specific, and it's so, you know, intuitive. You don't think about moving your hands. I'm waving mine around now like a mad woman. But you don't think about moving your hands. It just kind of happens. So how do you train a robot or make a robot learn to do those sort of organic actions?
Yeah, well, the thing that I'm focused on most is the mechanism that lets them move,
okay.
the motors
yeah.
that's actually going to allow them to make that movement. And normally, when you build a robot right now, you'll put an electric motor that spins very fast
mm-hmm.
in it. And then there'll be a series of gears that bring that down slow enough so it actually does what you want and has enough force.
Okay.
But if you look at nature, there are no wheels. There are no gears. There is nothing in nature that spins.
Right.
So we're kind of doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So are you sort of saying that the approach we need to be taking at that really basic level of the thing that drives it needs to change?
Exactly.
So how can we change it? Or how are you looking at changing it? What is the idea behind that?
So the idea is to make a linear motor. So instead of spinning, this will be something that moves in a straight line. It's a little bit like what's been used for, say, a maglev train.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of futurism back in the day, and realities have proven tough. But to get the force that this kind of motor can produce up to what we can get out of a muscle, we're taking some cues from how muscles are put together.
Okay. So you're looking at kind of organic matter and how that works.
Yeah. So, for instance, if you look with a microscope at what's in a person's muscles,
mm-hmm.
you see that there are lots of little tiny repeat units, one after the other. And they're only about a micrometer long.
How big is a micrometer, just first of all? Is that, we're talking teeny, teeny, teeny,
yeah,
tiny here.
Like 100 times thinner than a sheet of paper.
Okay, wow. That is very small.
And they all move separately?
So they all move together.
They all move together.
But each of those units is actually kind of separate. It all has its own supply of energy. It has its own way of getting the signal in to control it. But when we build a motor, we just build a big motor.
Yeah, yeah.
So by building the motor instead as little segments and supplying everything that it needs to each segment, we can actually get a lot more performance out of it than we could if we had to get it out to the outside of one big thing that was designed together.
This is kind of making me think, I'm sure this is a terrible analogy, but it is making me think of those wooden snakes that you get when there's like toys for kids and they all have tiny little sections that sort of move quite fluidly for something that's made out of a very hard matter, you know, some wood, basically. How is this going to be used in the real world? So say we get this motor system up and running, what kind of practical applications can you see this having?
Well, so the first thing we're looking at is in these exoskeletons to help people who've suffered a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, one problem that a lot of people have after a stroke is they can't really lift their arm.
Right.
And it's not because they have lost the ability to control those muscles. It's just it takes a lot of mental effort to move that muscles to lift your arm while also moving the muscles to do what you're trying to do.
Right, okay.
So if we put in a system to help them lift the arm with using this motor and this robot, then they're free to focus on actually doing what they want to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's awesome.
Would that be something like controlled? How would that be controlled then? Would that be controlled by their brains, or would that be controlled by something separate? How does that sort of work?
So we're still working on
still working on that side, I see.
Yeah. It would be great if we can get it to be controlled just by people's brains.
Yeah.
But someone who's had a stroke, the wires are a bit scrambled.
Yeah,
so maybe
yeah.
we're going to need something a little bit different to interpret that.
Yeah.
So what part of the university are you doing this under? Who are your peers around you?
Yeah, so I'm actually part of the Auckland Bioengineering Institute, and I work with people who are involved both in developing medical devices. So, for instance, we have a project to develop tools to do injections without needles, but also people who work fundamentally on how muscles operate. So they're looking at the biological research of how that goes.
Injections without needles?
Yes.
Wow. How does that work?
I feel like that's off topic, but that's just really captured me, because I would love that.
Yeah, you're not a fan of needles, Tess?
I don't like injections, no.
No, I think you're probably amongst a lot of company there. There tend to be something people not enjoy.
Wow. So I'm glad they're looking at that.
This is quite remarkable research then, because you are really taking it right back to the very basics of how something is put together and seeing how then you can sort of create something that will really benefit people's lives in quite a real way.
Exactly. How can we hope to really do what nature can do if we don't understand it first?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, well, it's been such a pleasure to chat to you. Thank you so much for popping in this morning, Dr. Brian Ruddy. It's
my pleasure.
Such a treat. I feel like every time we talk about robots, my idea of what they are changes dramatically.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, completely. So thank you so much for that.
That was Ready, Steady, Learn, thanks to the University of Auckland, the best university.
It's